Hey, welcome back to this session on security in the enterprise. In this particular module of the course, we're going to be taking a look at vulnerability management, and we're also going to talk a little bit around how the Windows Server 2003 end of life is probably something you ought to be thinking about, and something that maybe you even might be thinking about how you can overcome if you do still have 2003 inside of your organization. And joining me, as always, for this is Erdal. Erdal, what are we doing specifically in this session?
Thanks, Simon. Today, in this session, we are going to talk about software vulnerabilities, what they are, how can a vulnerability become a threat. I will try to show the big picture and a little bit about risk assessment as well. Then I will look into the vulnerability landscape, what is going on, what happened last year, what's happened early this year, and of course the impact. Mm-hmm. After that, as you said, we are going to talk about Server 2003 and the new vulnerabilities, which mm-hmm. is going to hit after June. I'm not saying I know any vulnerabilities, no, but I'm pretty sure there are lots of hackers waiting like this now. Hoo-hoo, come on, June, come. There are lots of servers which people are not going to upgrade, so let me hack them.
So, first up, what is a software vulnerability? What are we talking about when we talk about this?
If you remember our previous session, we did talk about Rocky Balboa mm-hmm. hitting from a weak point. So yes. Software vulnerability is an error in the information technology system that can be exploited by an attacker to compromise your CIA, mm-hmm. your confidentiality, integrity, and availability.
Okay.
So what is the CIA? CIA, so do you mind telling me how much money do you got in your bank account?
Well, let's just pick a number off the top.
Confidential.
Of my head. Yeah.
You will not share it with me. Now, I hope you got some money in your bank account. You are going to your bank account, you put your card into your ATM. Mm-hmm. You assume, because the money is yours, not the bank's, right?
Yep.
You assume your money is available whenever you want. So you put your credit card, your long PIN, which is not relating to anything, and they said, oh, sorry, today it's public holiday, we decided not to give you any money. Why? Because the hacker stole everything, mm-hmm. as we demonstrated in our previous session. So you want this to be available anytime.
Yep.
Or all your information is in Azure. And can you imagine Azure goes down? You're not going to be happy. So that's why you look when you sign up for cloud offering, you look at the uptime, right?
Yeah,
and Azure is a really good one
yeah.
anyway. Beside that, availability, integrity. So the money, you said, let's say you got $1,000. Mm-hmm. You went to the bank and you saw $100,000.
Probably pretty happy.
Smiling
yeah.
face.
Yeah.
But what about you see minus $300?
It's probably going to make me quite concerned.
So this is the integrity. Mm-hmm. And a software vulnerability can damage all of these, which is going to damage maybe you. But maybe you need to buy, you have to pay for a cab and you run out of cash. Or mm-hmm. you're hungry, you want to buy food. So we need some sort of way to have a vulnerability assessment, because if you are sick or if your car doesn't feel right, mm-hmm. you take it to a mechanic, you go to a doctor.
Yeah.
So what are you doing with your software vulnerabilities?
Hopefully you're patching them. Hopefully you're closing them as quickly as you can.
Yeah, but everything's a patch, right?
Yeah.
We did talk about patch management.
Yeah.
Now we need to talk about some sort of management process. And if we look into the most 5 popular browsers, the vulnerabilities went up compared to previous years. And thanks God to the improvement in Internet Explorer, the last year it went a bit down. And I'm pretty sure this figure is going to change a lot when Microsoft Edge becomes fully available.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, let's talk about what really a vulnerability is. So it's a flaw in application. Mm-hmm. which has some sort of security risk and, more importantly, functionality issues. These applications can be in any device, in a VM, mm-hmm. in a computer, any devices, right?
Yep.
What is Microsoft now? Cloud first,
mobility
first.
Yep.
So, yes, I know Microsoft produces Surface, but Microsoft also likes all the OEMs. Mm-hmm. How do I know that? I was just in a Surface building speaking to a program manager, and you know, he explained to all the inside outs as the MVP. So we, I mean, Microsoft loves all the OEMs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Microsoft bought Nokia. Now we have Lumia, Microsoft Lumia devices, but it doesn't mean HTC, Blue, or the other vendors are making Windows Phone. Microsoft still welcome them. But if there is, let's say, a flaw in the phone,
mm-hmm. then it's going to affect everything.
Are you going to blame the Blue or HTC? Or is it really a flaw in the software?
Yeah.
So just to find out, some flaws have different attack vectors. Some of them can be remote network, some of them local network, some of them local system. So the security is in three different measures. And when we look, availability might come a threat. So I always give this example. Are you scared, I mean, not probably now, are you scared to walk in the dark?
I was when I was a child. Yeah.
So you had always thinking, hey, there is something which is going to scare me.
Yeah, it's going to be something out there.
So that vulnerability might become a threat. Same applies to hackers.
Mm-hmm.
A vulnerability in your rib.
Yeah.
Maybe make you lose the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a game. There is only one winner.
Yeah.
But a hacker, if he or she identifies the vulnerability and develops something to work on this vulnerability in this vulnerability, this means the exploit has been used successfully.
Yeah.
Which means your business are open.
Yeah.
Remember my previous definition? Microsoft Patch Tuesdays said, please, there is a vulnerability in your IE, please patch it. In other words, they say, hey, your computer is open, your Windows is open, mm-hmm. and the back door, please close it down. If you don't, you're open to the attack.
Yeah.
Of course, every attack can be multiplied by threats. So a single vulnerability might have multiple exploits, or you might have a most common defense target exploit, which is not vulnerability. So it is a game which can be tangled from many different angles. So if you look at the market and its customers, exploits are sometimes commercial offers. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, you can go buy them. And remember, I explained that in 0 day. So basically some underground websites,
mm-hmm.
Sell
the access to the information of how to exploit that vulnerability.
Which may be used by hacktivists. We talked about hacktivists. What was hacktivists again? Hacktivists, please watch my previous MEA. Hacktivists are a group that protest while hacking.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have cyber criminals. They're the bad guys.
Yeah.
Then we have white hat hackers. They're people like me trying to hack yourself first to protect the environment. Or then we have the other organization groups and so. So the idea is here, if a vulnerability is known, there can be a targeted attack. So if you're playing soccer, you try, you know the target, or basketball or sport, you know where the goal is and your aim is to score. What you do as soccer player or basketball player, think about Michael Jordan.
Yep.
He uses his skills to bypass that defense to score. Think this, I never use this analogy, and I liked it to be honest, now it just came to my mind. Think this, and a hacker as well. Yeah. They use their skills to score, hack value.
That's exactly what they do. It's a good analogy.
So, multiplying risk, what is that? What is a risk, first of all?
Well, the risk is that there's gonna be, that you have a vulnerability and they're gonna get in there, but when you presumably have that same thing across a load of enterprise computers where you're controlling what patches are applying to what machines. When there's a problem on one machine, it's going to be replicated on more.
Yes. What is the word risk again? Your English is better than mine. I know it comes from risico in Italian.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know what the seed of that word is. But
risk, okay, the risk basically is some sort of possibility which can occur to live in danger. Remember, I give an example of when we were born, we were, you know, even when you were born, they do the reflex test.
Yeah.
So if I draw this mouse to your head, which we don't recommend you to do, okay, your eyes will close automatically.
Yeah.
Why? It's because your body has some sort of involuntary risk management.
Way of being able to manage the risk, yeah.
That urinal is a bit dangerous. He can get my poke my eye. Yeah. We don't want this to happen. Stop. Please, it's just an example.
Yeah.
So we don't want you to do that in your free time.
Yeah,
don't try it at home. Okay? So back to risk. Risk can cause security issues. I mean, back to track, threat. So the root cause of security issues is basically vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
I think we explained vulnerability in very detail. So many people think, hey, I'm safe. Based on Secunia vulnerability review, 86% of people think, hey, we are secure because we patch our computers. But if you look at this, actually, I misinterpret the numbers. Only 8.5% of the vulnerabilities are based on Microsoft products. 5.5% of them are based on operating system. The rest of 86% of the vulnerabilities is on third parties.
Yeah.
So you have your Windows secure? Good. What about using a vulnerable application such as Qt PDF? What about you use a vulnerable application such as Adobe Acrobat Reader, Java, Flash? You know, please, all these products I'm using in my laptop. I'm not saying they're not secure.
But it's a version of the software that's out of date, hasn't had the latest patches applied to it, hasn't
please
been updated.
Please use the auto update feature to protect yourself. And here's a beautiful report from Secunia again, which is free to read. I'm going to show you my demo. It tells you totally for free the most vulnerable applications. And if you don't mitigate these applications, look at this, US Department of Energy, the University of California, Snapchat, Facebook, all of those, we just spoke about Facebook, right? You might have everything. You remember you told me during that session that I use security restricted.
Yep.
That I said I wish I could show some photos from Mark Zuckerberg, based on the weakness vulnerability on his product.
Yep.
I mean, it wasn't his fault.
Yeah.
But some photos which is really inappropriate to show here in public.
Yeah, these things happen.
And I put all the sources there as well. Please go ahead and look into it. And if you look again on the average cost per security incident, we did talk about it as well. These numbers are changing. So the cost can be really different to everybody and anybody. It's really not important here. But the important thing here is you need somehow to be aware of vulnerabilities. For that, you have to research. You have to, I mean, you're at Microsoft. Yeah. I know at Microsoft we have security in build, okay? We have a dedicated team which works and tests all these. Then we have the influencers. Then we have the security professionals. Then we have the bad guys. So what can you do to research a vulnerability?
Search the web, I guess.
Search the web?
Yeah,
but
try
is this all enough?
Yeah.
No. So we should have some sort of mechanism for security professionals in the enterprise to have the vulnerability under control. This is what we call vulnerability management, which will help us to minimize how breaches can occur, which will basically include information, security as part of your business strategy, where you can develop policies and enforce these policies in the line of the strategy. It will definitely help you to focus on reducing the attack surface. And if you remember my previous slide decks or our previous conversations, I said, please keep an eye on what's going on. And we said, hey,
Microsoft review.
Windows has it already built.
Yeah.
Then I said, please, our main aim today is here to get you educated on how you can minimize the attack surface. Seriously, products we can talk all day about. Features we can talk all day about. But if you are not taking the proactive approach
to understanding what's going on with the software, then yeah, you're never going to be able to catch up. You're never going to be able to be in a safe position.
Look, I can just use some malware against you. Please give me permission, okay, in writing from your organizations. And please install whatever applications you like, any firewall, any antivirus, any hardening tools. If you have that 8 layer, which is end user, double clicking on it.
Yeah, it's going to be very hard to protect against the 8th layer of doing anything that they want to.
So, here's 3 tips. Be close to the vulnerability intelligence providers. I talked about Secunia, but I'm going to talk about some others. Leverage vulnerability management knowledge and make sure you work with the experts. And please make sure you research, vulnerability research helps organizations to improve their product security and thereby improve security for end users. Have a solution from a trusted resource.
Yeah.
All right, let's do a demo.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's have a quick look at something in live and see it happening on your machine around trying to mitigate some of these threats.
All right.
So how's your connection going? Are you
I hope it's going to work now.
So you're just getting connected back into your remote desktop environment
yes.
there, so you can
get like it's on, but it's
back
not.
Into your remote machine so that we can dive into the demo.
All right.
Every so often we get those little glitches.
All right.
Okay.
Look, I got a product called NextPause, okay? You can just log in. All right. Which NextPause is basically a vulnerability. There is a free version of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying go ahead buy it. Use the free version of it. It has a vulnerability research database where you scan your environment, or you can use Metasploit. Metasploit is again a paid version, a free version. I got the pro version in front of me, which is much easier to use. You can just click in vulnerability management. You can put your stuff that you, okay, this is a vulnerability management. If you have NextPulse, you can just pull the data from NextPulse. If you want, you can put some tags to make it easier. If you know what kind of vulnerability you're having, you can use some exploits from websites such as dbexploits.com and import them here and click and start. Click and start. Or you can come to the details here. You put the project members. You can just import the vulnerability data. It knows I have because it knows I have NextPulse. You can just do that, okay? Or what else? I'm going to show you another free tool, which you all know.
Yep,
by the way, the demo is working, okay? It's just basic next. It will run a scan, which I'm not going to do that. So it's just to give you an update information. What is this? Microsoft Security Analyzer. You can scan this computer or any computer. It will look on everything what you have. Start scan. Let it scan. What else can you do? Remember, I had Secunia PSI in the previous demo. What else? You can use Nessus, the free version. You can just log in, okay? Mm-hmm. So, and this will go ahead, gives you some vulnerabilities. And here we go, 97%. But hey,
pretty secure system.
This is. You need to be some sort of skilled to do that.
Yeah.
What is, if I can show you easier tools? All right, let's go to internet. For that, I'm gonna switch to my own PC. And here is a beautiful website, kb.cert.org, vulnerabilities. you will see the very recent vulnerabilities. And you see, look at this. If using Sobrion CMS, it's vulnerable for SQL injection by an authenticated user. So you can just rely on to these resources and read about it. Or if you're using Kaspersky antivirus, for example, mm-hmm. it has an inbuilt vulnerability scanner.
Cool.
Which you can use as well. Or another website here, National Institute of Standards and Technology, which helps you to have vulnerability research inbuilt totally for free. Or if you really want, here's security.com, vulnerability review, get latest numbers. I mean, I have it downloaded in my desktop with many others. Where is my research folder? You can see there are reports from so many, from Kaspersky, from Sense, from EC Council. And it tells you exactly. So if you don't know what you're doing, please, please, please go ahead and read this report. It costs lots of money to generate this data, but reading is for free. Okay, what is my most favorite tool to the paid tool? Let me just log in again. It's from Cygnia, okay. I'm just gonna log in quickly. Based on what I got, okay, I can see vulnerabilities. What it does is, I can just connect to PSI. I mean, PSI is not for enterprises, I cannot. There is also an enterprise product which they sell, it's called CSI. Mm-hmm. It scans my computer and it gives me generated report. Or, hey, we are IT professionals, we are lazy, right? Mm-hmm. What I'm gonna do is, I already went in actually, uploaded my data on what kind of, as you can see, my Surface.
Yep.
As soon as there's vulnerability, it sends me an email. And look at this. I got permissions, by the way, to use it. It's a paid license license information. But I have expected information where it says, hey, my Windows 8 is vulnerable. Please go ahead and patch it. And as you can see, it gives all the steps for me to patch it. So, or it emails me here. I'm just gonna quickly go. I have too many email addresses, sorry. Don't read my emails. Just joking, by the way. as you can see, it sends me, if you can please show my screen.
I can't show emails.
No, you cannot, but I'm gonna show you a report from my email. Probably you can show that. You will see, by the way, the report, which, you know, it's about Adobe Flash Player. All right, we can show that. We cannot show that. So, paid version or free version? Vulnerability management.
Yeah.
Really important. Why? I'm going to give you an example in the upcoming minutes. But either, if you can please show my screen, either, I'm not saying use Cygnia. I gave you Nessus. I gave you Metasploit, Rapid7. I gave you Software Engineering Institute by universities, by US government, okay? So, please, if you don't know what you're doing, at least use some sort of tool.
Go
because
get
you can't know everything.
Yeah.
You cannot know everything. So, you would like to talk about Microsoft?
It's almost time to say goodbye to XP. In fact, actually, that time has gone. It is now.
It's already.
It's now a bit of an issue. It's time to move off of XP and get on to something more recent, Windows 7, Windows 8, or Windows 10.
Why?
Because there's so much being done inside of those operating systems to prevent some of the major exploits, not just in a way that we can easily patch the operating systems to patch those holes up, but really fundamental changes. The ability to have better encryption with Windows came along with Windows 7. The availability of use space only encryption for BitLocker in Windows 8 meant that now we can be in a situation where all of the data that's actually been laid down on the disk is secure. And we're seeing more and more of those improvements with Windows 10 as well. And it's the same kind of things are affecting Windows Server 2003 as well. So we need to see people moving off of Server 2003 because we need to have those capabilities in order to be able to actually prevent against and mitigate the vulnerabilities that are coming.
And to be honest, Windows XP was secure. Look, we talked about AppLock in the previous session, but before we had software restriction policy. Yeah. Back then, in that technology, Windows had still the information like EFS encrypted file system, which was probably the grandfather of BitLocker. Probably, I'm not giving any technical information here, okay? What I'm trying to tell you is, but it's like your 1970 model car, not the classic one, the one with 300,000 mileage on it, which still works but gives you issues. It can stop anytime, anywhere. All right, let's talk about some numbers. End of life affects lots of customers, and the security compliance might cost you more than $200,000 per year, depending on your size. Support is a nightmare. Regularity is a nightmare. Maybe for the people that are not watching from US, like what is HIPAA? What is probably HIPAA is...
What are the compliance laws?
Okay, HIPAA is basically health insurance compliance here in the US. But I think all of you know PCI, SOX, Dodd-Frank. So these industries, they will not give you compliance if you don't do, if you are not up to date.
Yeah.
So, beside that, your performance. Please, do you remember the restart time in Windows NT 4?
4 or 5
and
minutes.
And Windows 10?
Well, 4 or 5 minutes on Windows, on NT 4.
Oh, you scared me on Windows 10.
Probably about a few seconds for Windows 10.
Yeah. Or Windows 7?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, what does this mean to you? Simon, you would probably tell as Microsoft better. You're running old operating system means you have lots of maintenance costs, right?
Yeah. Well, you're going to have something in order to be able to protect against the vulnerabilities as much as you possibly can without some of those newer core operating system improvements.
So no more patch Tuesdays?
Well, yeah, you're going to not get the patches for those operating systems. So you're going to need to have other things in place to try and help mitigate some of those risks.
So they're going to be by themselves?
Yeah.
Alone. So let's say, okay, let's say they're still using the old operating system, but they bought a brand new printer, for example.
Mm-hmm.
They will not have also the driver updates, right?
Yeah, because the driver updates
aren't going to be there.
Because the folks that make the hardware aren't going to be producing the driver updates. So slowly, things are going to become more aged inside of the environment, and it's just going to be very, very hard to make stuff work.
All right. Windows XP, we agree. Mm-hmm. But what about 2003? I mean, today is, I don't know, Wednesday, May 13th. Yeah. I think we can mention the date.
We've got about...
It's offline recording, but I don't know when you're going to watch this video. Maybe next week, maybe in a month, maybe next year. So when you watch it, the date is either going to be finished or about to finish.
Yeah.
It's time to think about 2003 as well, because migration is a long process. And if you still didn't think too much about it, that's really not good. So, Simon, can you give us, please, some fact about 2003?
Well,
so, was it bad? Is it? Are we moving away because it's bad, or...?
No, it's a pretty good operating system. It's actually one of the most deployed operating systems of its time. The problem is that the world has moved on around the operating system. So, the threats that we now see as a result of some of the vulnerabilities that have been discovered and are still being discovered are different. And they're new. They're using new techniques that could never have been brought into any kind of threat mitigation when the operating system was being developed. So it's a very, very difficult thing to
do. We're going
to
cover it later.
Yeah.
But for example, biometrics.
Yeah.
In 2003, you have no biometric support.
Yeah.
2008 R2 has it inbuilt, and you can deploy it as a group policy. Look, I'm not talking 2012, okay? I'm getting 2008 R2.
Yeah.
So just as a small mitigation. So things are changing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, things like the processor architectures have changed very much as well. And newer processor architectures have newer security features built into them as well. They can do things like be able to support hyper-threading, and they also allow for virtualization, which wasn't necessarily something that you could do very easily back in 2003.
Well, and things are changing. Like most of the new operating systems, they only work in 64-bit, for example.
Yeah.
2003 was, I think, the last, 2008 actually, was the last 32-bit
operating system.
Server operating system, right? So things are changes. Memory was different. I remember when I bought my first meg of RAM.
Yeah.
It was back, I mean, I'm not talking to about 2003. Mm-hmm. But back then, Windows XP, I remember 64 meg of RAM. 1 gig, you need to be really lucky to have 1 gig RAM back then. Today, 4 gig is not even enough. Like my Surface is 8 gig, depending. I mean, of course, using, if you are an end user, maybe you buy a Surface 3, which you don't require much RAM. But again, I'm talking about modern applications for persons like you and me. Yeah. We need more and more RAM.
But from a server point of view, we're now seeing servers supporting terabytes of RAM, which is a giant leap forward. And that's one of the reasons why we can also see that happening with the technology that's being used to build the actual devices. And we can see the speed of those devices has increased to an amazing
amount. Saying the speed, I know you are good on the figures, mm-hmm. but I read it, I think, somewhere, and I put it in the slides as well. Windows Server 2012 R2 is not 1, not 10, but 100. 1,000 times greater than 2003 based on statistics. And hey, you're supposed to say that. I don't work for Microsoft.
Yeah, there are some numbers out there that really do show that kind of stuff. So it's kind of incredible.
Same applies to storage. Same applies to virtualization. Okay, a bit more marketing. I agree, okay? But networking. What about networking? The speed.
Mm-hmm.
Now we can get 1 gigabyte easily, but we're talking about 10 gig networks.
Yep.
Even networking is basically changed. And look at this. You can have 40 gigabyte shipping, 100 gigabyte coming to the market this year in 2015.
Yeah.
So performance is again 10 to 40 times greater as well. We talked about virtualization. We said back then it was, I mean, today we talk about the cloud. But hey, cloud is all up because of the virtualization technologies, right? Mm-hmm. So what it is means, things are shifting. Cloud is helping, but the big question is Microsoft going to change the Windows 2003 end of support date? Are you going to extend it, my friend?
I'm not going to answer that, but my guess would be that no.
I can answer that for you. Last week at Ignite, it was announced by the VP of server, the answer is no, of course, based on the conference, okay? But unless a miracle happens, I think there was one exception on Windows XP with IE update, unless a miracle happens, July 14, 2015. If you're in Australia, July 15, you know, it's tomorrow in Australia. So, there is a lots of things changing. What does end of support means? As you said, no updates.
Yeah.
No compliance.
Which
risks.
The risk of no compliance is that suddenly puts organizations into a very difficult place when they have to maintain certain contracts and that kind of thing.
At November 10, 2014, the US Department of Homeland Security did alert, actually, everybody saying, hey, be aware, because Microsoft calls it no safe haven. Basically, the impact is going to be big, and you will have so many applications which is not going to be supported anymore. Mm-hmm. So, what does this mean? As Microsoft, what can you say?
Now's the time to do it.
Now, or should I wait till June 13?
Yeah, it's probably worth waiting. No, now is the time to act. It is the time to act. In fact, actually, probably should have started acting about a year ago or more in order to move on to a more recent operating system, because we do know that migrations do take time.
So how can we do the migration? Comes back to the vulnerability assessment as well. You should have something to assess management, we call it, mm-hmm. to discover. Because if you don't know what assess you got, you don't know what to protect.
Yeah.
So you need to be able to discover. And if you have a good vulnerability management system, this will help you as well.
Yeah.
Then, what are you assessed? I mean, for me, Simon May is assessed as well. Mm-hmm. But you don't need any patch, thanks God.
Yeah. No human patches here.
But the applications that Microsoft creates, or any company creates, the target, your destinations, your when I say destination, so what is your destination? The good side, being in the being in a safe place, or bad side, dealing with security issues, compliance issues all the time, will give you the option. The option is yours.
Yeah.
Nobody's gonna tell, hey, give the server 1003 back. You are not allowed to use it anymore. Mm-hmm. But
yeah,
when bad things happen,
yeah,
and they hit the fan, it's not much where you can do. Yeah. That's why, please discover what you have. Please assess your inventory. Know what is important. Know what is complex. Calculate the risk. And more importantly, evaluate options for each application and workload. Otherwise, you can be hacked.
Yeah.
All right. I have I'm supposed to do a demo in the previous thing, but I just remembered. You might talk quickly about the upcoming trends again. So migration is a good option, right?
Yeah.
Cloud is a good option.
Absolutely.
Or Server 1012 is a good option.
Yeah, and each one that you're going to take is going to depend on the right place to actually move your environment to. You might find that actually maintaining your own servers is going to be a great thing to do, but you might find that actually maybe there is less risk and more reward from moving that service into Azure and allowing Microsoft to actually just maintain and patch and update and secure that virtual machine for you, or rather that that virtual instance for you. Or you might decide that you want to stay in control of that, but you still want Microsoft to run the underlying infrastructure. You might also think that actually running any of the infrastructure is not something that's a requirement. So why not move some of those services into some of our software as a service offerings like Office 365 in order to be able to use them, update them, keep them managed continuously. So there's a whole range of options that have changed dramatically since Server 2003 was around. So as you're starting to try and work out what the right place is to migrate your offerings to and move them up to, then it's time to actually start reassessing some of the fundamental thinking inside of your organization. You could well be more secure by moving a workload up to the public cloud.
Which actually is going to bring me to the demo again. Let me do a quick demo on Get the Hash, for example. Let me just quickly set it up. So we said it's important to have modern application operating system.
Yeah, and one of the main reasons for that is that more modern operating systems have specific things in there in order to be able to mitigate patch the hask. One of the major things inside of Windows Server 2012 R2 is actually the idea of silos, and silos allow us to start preventing pass the hash on our networks. Very, very useful technology. We're also building capabilities into Windows 10 right now, which will really, really help with mitigating pass the hash.
Let me demonstrate it to you.
Yeah.
Okay, here's my demo machine, Windows 8. I'm going to tool, which we talked about it, PSExec. I'm going basically using PSExec, and I'm gonna connect to my client, which is in Azure. It's called V7 Next Client. Oh, what I'm going to do is basically connect to it with a user called Bert. I got his password. You saw me in the previous sessions how I could hack passwords. Mm-hmm. Okay, now I'm connecting to that PC as Bert. PSExec will slightly connect to that user. Let's wait. It should just connect shortly. All right, here we go. Now I am connected in the V7 Next Client. And what I'm gonna do is, I'm gonna run a PowerShell script. But hey, you know what? I can just run the PowerShell script directly, but I don't want to, you know, what I'm gonna do is, I don't want to attach it to a file.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, all I'm gonna do is, I'm gonna use that website to, and from there I'm gonna get that URL, which is basically going to run a function. I'm gonna do, instead of copying that PowerShell and attach it somewhere, like in my ProRed example, I'm gonna copy that URL, okay? And force my user, as long as they get it, to click on it somehow, because I want to get their password. So I'm gonna run a script. But first of all, who am I? I'm Bert.
Yeah.
And the next net PC. Now it's time to use PowerShell, and I'm using the PowerShell as new object, and I'm gonna download the string from that website. What I've done is, to be honest, I shortened that URL, and my aim is to get that GPP password. Let's click enter. Boom. Look at the password. It's quite complex. Do you see the password here?
Yeah, passwords. Yeah. Password one. Yeah.
And the GPP user, here's a GP admin. The password is there, and the other password is there. Of course, but I made that password a bit stupid.
But that's the password that you already knew because you used it to access their account.
Yeah, the first one, not the second one.
Ah, okay. Right.
What about the second one? Now, I was able to steal some passwords, right? The question is, what will happen, for example, Windows 8? If you do the same thing, the password is going to be blank. But the hash is going to be there. So then I can do pass the hash attack.
Ah, okay.
Which is going to be fixed in Windows 10.
Yeah.
For that, I'm going to do quickly another demo.
So you could just literally get onto the machine and then talk to the credential store and get the hash out of the credential store.
Yes.
Is essentially what you just did.
1 second, please, to go there. What happened to my RDP session? All right, now I am in another PC, okay? I am now the next hacker. As you can see, now it's different PC, I think, yeah. I'm running CMD, tools, PSExec again. So, connecting to the PC. NextNet as Bert. Remember the password that I stealed? I'm connecting to the service again. It will take some time. Here I am. So, quick reminder, what did I do a few minutes ago? I used a ready PowerShell script from that website, right? So if you can quickly get the camera to me, please. What I've done is, I used that PowerShell script and I wanted to show you one more time again how did I done that, because the idea was to be able to go on, so people doesn't have to always click on something and get infected. People can also force to get infected in some different ways. And this was one of the danger points, by the way. 1 second, I'm just gonna run. I know what I done wrong. So now back to my demo machine, please. I done what I done is basically, while you're looking away, I copied the password. Okay, that's what I got now. Password one, I knew. Now I'm going to command prompt. Okay. Just usual command prompt. From there, I'm gonna start my tools again. Again, PSExec. Now I'm connecting to a different machine. This is the V7 Next client. Again, I use the PSExec tools.
And now you're using the GPP admin that you stole the password for.
Now I'm connecting from that Windows 7 PC, not 8. To that domain joined computer. And soon I'm going to be able to connect with PSExec silently. Let me type. Okay. Should just work, hopefully. And here we go. I'm in. Now, what I'm going to do is, who am I? hey, look at this, I'm the NT authority, I'm not bird anymore. And if you remember, I logged in as him. So, which means this is part, I'm already, this is basically, I use the hash to get the password. And from there, I'm able to jump to another machine, which can bring different dangers. Now, I'm going to do probably another demo here. What I'm going to do is I copy and paste basically the PowerShell. This time, again, I'm downloading the string from that website, but I'm going to invoke Mimikatz. Okay? It's really, really important. So I'm still using PowerSploit, but this time over CMD. Remember, I started CMD.
Yeah.
And my aim is here to download that code from that website again. This time, I didn't use short URL, which is going to start PowerShell at the back end. And as you can see, it will connect hopefully shortly. Boom. Let me scroll up. Look at this. Scroll a bit more up. A bit more. Here we go. We started as Bert, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's his password. And we could see the password. We could just steal it. If you scroll down, now this is the domain. We don't see any password, but there is the hash. So let me copy the hash. So, okay, it's a bit more secure because
it's, yeah, because it's a hash, but it's.
So now I can just go to that command prompt again. Mm-hmm. So okay, I don't know the password, but I know the hash, no problem. I go to tools, I go to PSExec, I connect to my client, this time Windows 8. Type gpp admin dash p. So again, I copy the password. I'm not a good typer, to be honest.
Yeah, much easier to do that.
I put the command basically saying, hey, use this password. Connect to PSExec and act as that user. Mm-hmm. It should hopefully connect. It's in Azure, by the way. It's live, hosted. And you see, I'm Windows 8 PC. Okay, boom. I'm in. Now I'm copying the same command. Invoke Mimikatz, which I used, but I don't know if you noticed, this time I'm the GPP admin, not Burke anymore. Which means I'm going to connect to the domain joint computer with GPP administration rights. And if you look here carefully, now, where is it? Scroll up, 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 up. Where is it? I'm trying to find it. Hey, username, domain. Oh, I can't see the password. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember LM hashes. Yep. But hey, it's quite secure. But boom, the hash is there again.
So then we can just go take that hash and use it again.
And we will get that hash and use it again. Now, what I'm going to do is, I'm going to run as administrator, PowerShell, go to my copy-paste command tool, and paste the hash, which I copied, and NTLM hash, sorry for my typo. And here's the hash. You hear the clicks there. Now, I'm straight away invoke the Mimikatz. Excuse me. And what I'm doing is, I'm going to the command prompt, if I can type it. What I'm gonna do is, I go back to my privileges. Now I want to do privilege escalation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's do debug mode. I want to be in the secure LSA. And the path is user. So the remember he was next admin?
Mm-hmm.
And the domain was basically next expert. Next.net.net. But I don't know his password. I know his NTLM hash. Let me just paste the NTLM hash. And I'm gonna exit right after. Enter.
So now that's given you another window, which is
another
presumably
window.
The administrator that you just used the credentials for.
Perfect. And guess what? Now, dsa.ms. Hey, oh, sorry. I misspelled it. Here we go. Active Directory is users and computers. Let me connect to the Active Directory, which is NextExpert, Next.net. Let's create a new user. Boom.
Nice. So you were just able to kind of elevate your privileges all the way from a basic user on a machine all the way up through to...
Let's call it hack. Let's call it admin. Let's call it hack admin. Click next. Let's put my secure password. Don't change the password. By the way, this is a bad practice. Don't do what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Everything else was a good practice, by the way. And the properties, hey, look at this. Of course, I want to be the admin. Domain admin. Okay. Bala bing, bala bum.
All the way from nobody up to an admin and creating your own admin account on the domain.
And I don't know if you noticed, it was through using older version of service.
Yeah.
So, vulnerability management, it's up to you to upgrade to the latest or stick to the old one and face the constant requests.
Yeah. Okay, so that brings us to the end of the module. Thank you very much for watching and come back for the final module of this course.
Thank you very much.